Oh, well.
Yeah.
Anyhow, we're farbling again.
Yep.
We're so good at that.
I know. If we live next door, we could do it every day. Welcome, warrior. You are listening to Bound by Honor, the Klingon Assault Group Book Review Podcast. Your host, Jorn Sutai Vampyr, and Jajim Vestai Jajim, will explore Klingon culture as it appears in Star Trek literature. Perhaps you yourself can hear the cry of your inner warrior. If so, go to www.kag.org and make your presence known. Learn how to join the Klingon Assault Group and begin your journey along the way of the warrior. Now, here are your hosts, Kapla. Greetings, warrior, and welcome to Bound by Honor, the Klingon Book Review Podcast. I am Jajim.
And I am Jorn. And please do not confuse this with 50 Shades of Klingon Grey.
You're right. Today, we are going to be looking at a book called The Lost Era, 2328 through 2346, The Art of the Impossible by Keith R.A. DeCandido, published in October of 2003. Another book by Keith. Yay! I'm glad for that.
But this book does not take place over a weekend. It literally takes place from the year 2328 to the year 2346.
Mm-hmm. So we got 18 years.
But it's a normal size book.
Yeah. There is a lot packed in here. So why don't you tell us what was on the back of the book?
Okay. Well, first of all, on the back of the book is the barcode to tell you how much to pay for the book.
Neat. That's innovative.
Actually, it is, because I've got about at least a tenth of my book collection that doesn't have a barcode on the back of the book. It shows you how old they are.
Yeah.
Anyhow, the summary of the plot from the back of the book. To the Cardassians, it is a point of pride. To the Klingons, it is a matter of honor. For the 18-year Cold War between these two empires, you mystically remembered in the later years as the Betreka Nebula Incident. Can't these guys come up with things I can pronounce? Creates a vortex of politics, diplomacy, and counterintelligence that will define an age and shape the future. What begins as a discovery that would enable the Klingon Empire to reclaim a lost piece of its past becomes a prolonged struggle with the rapidly expanding Cardassian Union, which has claimed dominion over a region of space that the Klingons hold sacred. Even the Federation, whose desire to preserve interstellar stability leads Ambassador Curzon Dax to broker a controversial and tenuous peace, one that is not without opponents, including Lieutenant Elijah Vaughn of Starfleet Special Ops. But there are wheels within wheels to the drama unfolding in the Betreka Nebula. Within the shadowy rooms of the Cardassian Obsidian Order, the Klingon Imperial Intelligence, and even the Romulan Tal Shiar, secret scales are being balanced. And for every gain made for the sake of peace, there comes a loss. Oh, and I forgot. Da, da, da.
Yep, that's it. So we have 18 years of story crammed in here. And, gosh, there's so much, you know, if we tried to cover every little detail, I think we'd miss something.
No, we could cover every single detail, but not in a single hour-long podcast. We'd be here a week.
Yeah, it would take a while. All right, so what are your overall impressions?
Well, first of all, this book takes place over many, many years, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And because it takes place over many, many years, it has lots of twists and turns happening in it. Nobody's plans work out as they expect them to. Things change. Keith covers a lot of ground that is alluded to in many Star Trek episodes. What happened to General Worf? You know, the Worf we know from Star Trek The Next Gen's grandfather?
Mm-hmm.
The Klingon who defended Kirk and McCoy in Star Trek VI? He's in it.
Mm-hmm.
What happened to Moog, Worf's father? He's in it. Why was he accused of treason for Khitomer? Well, that's in it.
Yep.
The USS Enterprise C is coming to the aid of the Klingons in the surprise attack. Yeah, that's in it. What happened to Laxana Troi's husband, Eon Troi? That's in it.
Yep.
Curzon Dax's efforts to act as the Federation ambassador to Ponos and how he's trying to fix the current political problems going on the planet they Cardassians have found. That's in it.
Yep.
We've even got Sergei Rosenko finding and adopting the Worf we know. Oh, yeah. That's in it.
Yeah, and there's more. That's not where it ends.
No.
So
it's a long story.
Yes. It's a long story, but a great story, and it sure moved along. I mean, there was no wasted space in this book whatsoever, and yet it was so well organized and written, it was just so easy. It was very easy to follow. The story was exciting, with segments covering a long time, but the thing that tied it all together is the feud between the Klingon commander and his Cardassian counterpart over a pile of junk on a planet. But
Jim, just remember, it's Kim with a C. You know, Kim Kardashian.
Oh, no, wrong. No, that's not the kind of Cardassian I'm talking about.
No. She's with a K. These guys are with a C.
Oh, yeah. All right, so anyway, another great story from Keith, who does spell it with a K. All right, so
you know, I've listed a bunch of characters here that appear in this novel, but that's barely touching the number of characters that Keith has to deal with.
Yeah.
You got Worf, you got Moog, you got Worf again. You got Worf's parents, his adopted parents. You got the High Council going through three different chancellors.
Three chancellors, yes.
You got the Cardassian High Council. You got the Romulans and their people.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got Federation people. And you've got, the Beta Zed people.
Mm-hmm.
You've got people from the Star Trek series. You know, Worf, Rachel Garrett, Curzon Dax is even mentioned in it, in the series. But Keith draws all of these people in, and there's tons more. And because you're talking about an 18-year history of the area, he has no trouble being able to kill them off because that's what happened to their characters.
Mm-hmm.
We all know that Moog gets killed, but
right.
We don't find, you know, we find out in this book why General Worf, or the Worf we know's grandfather, is killed.
Yeah.
And how it's done.
Yep.
You know, we see Eon Troi dying in this book, like he's referred to in the TV series.
Right. Yeah. And we find out that Loaxana wasn't a whole lot different when she was married to him than she was before. And even during this book, we find out that Deanna is born.
Yeah.
And we get Eon Troi's feelings on their first daughter.
Well, let me give you a tip here, Jim. Deanna Troi had to be born during the course of this novel because Eon Troi doesn't survive the novel.
Right. So it's...
So he's got to conceive her before he dies.
Right. Well, and the thing is it's just we get all these little threads.
Little bitty bits.
That were
that
let
Keith is
go.
Able to weave together.
Yeah, they were...
Into this story.
They were stories that were just dangling out there, begging to be told, and Keith grabbed a hold of them and put them together. I have actually seen where there are people that say that this particular work is Keith's best novel in the Star Trek universe.
I don't know. That I think Keith's best novel is still out there somewhere in the future.
Well, and that could be. But I think as far as Star Trek, some, not all, but some Star Trek fans, they say this is the absolute hands-down best. And I would say, yeah, it's in my top five, for sure. All right, we traveled all over the place in this book.
Cardassia, Kronos, and beyond.
Right. So,
and I hate using that phrase because of the new movie that's coming out.
Yeah.
Lightyear.
Mm-hmm.
That's one they didn't need to make of.
Yeah. Now, I don't have any notes written down on this, and it's been like a month since I've read the book. So, let's just go a little bit into what happens. Okay, the Cardassians land on a planet that is pretty close to the Klingon border, and they find a pile of wrecked spaceship belonging that was a Klingon ship there.
Well, the problem is they don't find that right away. What they find right away is an abundance of a mineral that they need for their planetary industries.
Yeah.
For their spacecraft. And they're mining away before they find the historical ruins of this Klingon vessel.
Right.
Now, the Klingon vessel they find happens to be of the fleet of first Klingon ships that go out into the universe after the Hurk invaders are kicked out.
Mm-hmm.
So by the time the Klingons get involved and want to get their ruins back, the Cardassians are literally dug in deep trying to get as much of this ore out as they can to use in building ships.
Mm-hmm. All right.
So that's why it's such a tight fight.
Right. And
in the night.
The Klingons say there are relics on this ship that are very important to them, and they don't want them in the hands of the Cardassians. Of course, the Cardassians go, we got them, and tough for you, and everybody's ready to start going to war over this.
Because these two species want to go to war.
Right. Okay, now Curzon steps in, and he is a hero to most of the Klingons.
So they'll probably do whatever Curzon says.
Right. So what does Curzon do? He hammers out this thing where the Klingons take part of the planet and the Cardassians take the other part of the planet. The unfortunate thing is Curzon arranges it so that the relics are in the Cardassian zone.
Well, if he didn't, the Klingons would just dig them up and leave.
Right. So now it's...
But here's the thing. Why did Curzon design this type of a treaty? He patterned it exactly after the Organian peace treaty from Aaron of Mercy.
Right. And, you know, I thought pretty highly of Curzon from what I saw in DS9, but I had to wonder what he was about. And so did another character, Elias Vaughn, who is kind of a ambassador himself. He's not very happy with the situation either.
Actually, he was Federation Intelligence.
Yeah, that's it. Federation Intelligence. He follows Curzon all over the galaxy, questioning him on this decision for years. I mean, Curzon's...
Well, the book goes on for years.
Yes, and Curzon is vacationing on Ryza with a Horgon sitting in his lap, and here comes Elias Vaughn to flip him crap about this treaty. So, yeah. Well, eventually, it has to come to an end, and after a four-sided chess match that's been going on forever and ever, it finally gets resolved to everybody's satisfaction. The Cardassians get what they want, they get what they need, because nobody else needs it. So,
but they get, the Klingons get what they need, but not what they want.
Mm-hmm.
The Klingons wanted that those relics.
Uh-huh.
But one of the Klingon chancellors in this book is a member of the household who headed that expedition when they first left Kronos.
Right.
And something went wrong with the expedition.
Well, there's a mutiny.
And that doesn't go over well.
No.
So he really doesn't want the relics found. And when they decide to give the planet to the Cardassians, the relics are going to stay with the Cardassians, and the Klingon people are never going to see what happened with that mutiny.
Right. Well, and okay. And then I address that. Now, under our caption, things that we would want to talk about, and you've got some, I've got some. I'll go first because I kind of addressed this.
Because I kind of stepped on your toes, eh?
No, not at all, okay?
Well, stick your toes out. I need to step on them.
Well, all right, here, I'll try. As long as I
bang,
don't...
Bang, 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 bang.
As long as it's not my neck and my head gets cut off. All right, at first, I didn't get the relics thing with the Klingon, okay? I do not remember Klingons putting a lot of value in things, whether they're historical or not, unless they are weapons or other useful items. Okay.
Don't forget, they've got the Hall of Heroes.
Well, but that's people. That's not things.
That's statues.
Right. It is their people that are more important to them. Okay. So, hell, they don't even try to preserve their dead, right?
They're just empty shells.
It's an empty shell. Dispose of it as you see fit. So why all the flap over these artifacts? And I'm puzzling over this through the book. At first I thought, well, it's because the Cardassians have them, and that means the Klingons want them, okay? They don't want anybody to have them, especially not the Cardassians. Well, that would be enough. But the reveal of the scandal over these bits of flotsam revealing secrets of a noble family and mistakes that were made, that tied it all together for me. So I finally understood.
Well, remember, when they're first discovered, the Chancellor of the Klingon High Council is not the Chancellor who's of the family who doesn't want the secrets out.
Right.
The fact that these relics were found, that drives the Klingons to want them.
Mm-hmm.
Want them badly. Over time, though, I think the desire, I think it even comes across in Keith's writing, the desire for the relics loses its luster, and the Klingon people are becoming more and more, really, do we really want them? What's the big deal?
Exactly.
Why do we care?
Well, that's because someone high up does not want to have to face his family becoming dishonored.
And when the new chancellor comes into power, that's exactly what happens.
Mm-hmm.
And why do they give up on the ruins? Well, because he loses the chancellorship and somebody else becomes chancellor. And now they're going, why do we want these things? They're just a burden.
That's Kim Peck, yeah.
You know.
Right. And then, Kim Peck was very concerned about maintaining the honor of the Empire over the honor of an individual person, and we saw that in Next Generation when he had, when Worf got discommodated. They knew that Worf or that Moog did not commit any dishonorable act, which, for the Kittimer thing, but yet Worf had to pay the price in order to keep scandal out of the Empire, and Kim Peck did the same thing with these relics.
Which is why at the end of the book, the Cardassians get the planet and can mine it better because, you mentioned that Curzon gave the Cardassians the half of the planet that had the relics on it.
Right.
Well, he also gave the half of the planet to the Klingons that had the ore the Cardassians wanted on it. Neither one got what they wanted.
Right. So, a next point that I had, DS9 would have us believe that Curzon was some sort of miracle worker, an infallible hero when it came to being able to mediate between people, and I would have to say a solution between the Klingons and Cardassians was quite fallible, leading to 18 years of Cold War. That, I don't know about the Cardassians, but the Klingons couldn't very well afford it.
No, I don't think, and I think it was mentioned too, that Cardassia was not in the best of shape at this time either.
Right.
They were still trying to consolidate their hold over Bajor. That was talked about in the book.
Mm-hmm.
But I think DS9, more than portraying him as an infallible hero, portrayed him as one of the first, maybe only, Federation ambassador who actually understood Klingon culture.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And he did that. We see that through Jadzia. So my final point is...
Well, we also saw it earlier in another book we read.
Uh-huh.
What is it? Of Fire.
Oh, Faces of Fire?
Yeah. Where we deal with Captain Sulu, Kang, Kor, and Koloth,
mm-hmm,
going after the Obino and the stuff that Curzon has to do to be part of the action that he's chomping at the bit to be a part of.
Yeah, that wasn't Faces of Fire. That was before. Okay, well, the other thing that I found in this book that intrigued me was following Worf's lineage, which was filled in, and the reasons for why things went the way they did. You know, this is one of the main reasons I enjoy the book so much. Now, a lot of people will say, you know, well, the books aren't canon, so it doesn't matter. And my answer to that was, so what? You know, it was a really good story. It was logically written. It could be canon very easily. But just because it's not, it hasn't been on TV or it hasn't been in a movie, to calling it not officially canon, fine, I don't care. I'm not going to have that argument with anybody. Or, you know, hey, read the book. You'll find out it's a good story. It doesn't matter whether it's canon or not. So those are three things.
Isn't that exactly what we're doing with the TV episodes? We're watching good stories and...
Right. But, you know, it's some of these people with this canon argument.
Excuse me, Jim?
Yeah.
It was Forged in Fire.
Oh, yes, that's right.
That's the name of the book, Forged in Fire.
Forged in Fire, yes. So, yeah. No, you know, whatever. But it's just a great book. Did you have any other things you wanted to discuss?
Well, most Star Trek books are written pretty much like any other novel. And they're going to detail a story. They're going to detail it in depth. This book is written more like a history book.
Mm-hmm.
In that you're getting the events that go on and not a lot of detail about those events, because there's a lot of events that are going to go on.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a different type of read. And even though the relics the Cardassians find are sacred to the Klingons, even the Klingons get tired of dealing with them. You know, we've talked about that for a bit.
Yeah.
And we find out that they are less sacred and more evidence of a house. I'll delete all that. We've talked about all that.
Yeah, right.
So now, I mentioned when I was saying that it's more like a history book, there's a lot of stuff going on. There's a lot of different episodes. So in most books, you're going to find two or three adventures going on. In this book, you have finding the relics, fighting for the relics, the peace conference for the relics. I missed one. The battle for the relics.
Mm-hmm.
Life under Curzon Dax's competition for the planet for the relics. The death of General Worf.
Who was a relic himself.
Yeah. and they talk about that in the book. Even he feels that way.
Yes.
The Romulan invasion of Narenda 3, where Worf's son, Moog, becomes a relic.
Yes.
And the Cardassians' invasion of Khitomer.
Oh, the Romulan. And
the Romulan invasion of Khitomer.
Yes.
Which I guess is actually where Moog becomes a relic. But, and then the, you know, aftermath of that, where Moog's son, Worf, is found by his adopted parents, the Roshinkos.
Yeah.
Lots of different things going on.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not even including the resolution of the competition for the planet of the relics.
Right. Yep. So it's,
you know, just interesting. Maybe that should have been the title. Planet of the Relics.
Yeah. It's just so well put together. It's mind-boggling the amount of work that must have gone into writing this.
Just to keep it straight.
Yes. Of course, now, you are a part-time writer, and I'm a part-time writer. And I'm even more part-time writer than most. You know, I'm kind of a weekend bang out a few words if I can.
But, I feel I'm really, really part-time right now.
But I think part of Keith's advantage is being a professional writer, and that's his job. And so he's probably able to keep at something till it gets done.
Once you get the words moving, they keep moving, almost on their own.
Yeah.
If you have any questions in your mind about what's going to happen, your mind is going to shut down those fingers, and the writing is going to stop until you resolve it. Fortunately, Keith did not have this issue in putting this book together.
Yeah, he knows his business, that's for sure. All right, so you have a concept here. No plan survives first contact with the enemy.
We see this in lots of books. We see this in lots of the teaching of history. We probably even see this in military academies. No plan ever survives first contact. Something is going to mess up.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And you talk about writing, Jim. If you don't take that maxim into account when you're working on a story, it doesn't read very well, because the reader wants to see things go wrong. It's almost surprising that Mission Impossible ran as a TV series for the number of years that it did run on,
mm-hmm.
when there was maybe something go wrong with every one of their plans. But it was so minor that it didn't matter. They could have been caught and the plan would have still worked.
Oh, yeah. Well, and that's just, you know, that's just it. You got to have that doubt. You know,
you got to have a threat.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, even with movies I've watched after I've read the book, you know, I still like get into at a point where, oh man, are they going to make it? Are they going to actually make it through this? Of course, you know they are, but it's still fun to anticipate not.
Of course, there are very few books that follow the novel religiously enough that you don't have to worry about it.
Yeah.
I mean, I think Day of the Jackal was the first one that I encountered,
mm-hmm.
in that it literally was like reading the frickin' book on the screen.
Yeah.
As they went through the details of it.
So, let's move on. And under favorite points of plot, I like your quip there.
Yeah, see the adventures section.
Right, which is finding the relics, fight for the relics, and so forth and so on.
Relics, 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 relics.
Yeah. Your theme is
so much could go wrong with the best plans.
There you go.
I know what I meant to say.
Yeah.
Just because it doesn't read that way.
Yeah, no matter what, no matter how well you plan, you've got to be adaptable. You've got to be flexible. And I'll tell you what, you don't learn that anywhere better than you do in a classroom as a teacher.
I don't know. I find writing novels teaches me that, because I'll write the wrong thing and I got to go back and fix it.
Yeah, I try not to wrong thing.
So much can the best plans go wrong.
Which
should have said, so much can go wrong with the best plans.
Yeah. Okay.
See? Writing does the trick.
Yeah. All right. So what are your closing thoughts on this particular book?
Well, okay. see the adventure section?
Uh-huh.
there's the closing thoughts for you. All the things that go on in the adventure section.
Mm-hmm.
Keith has to be a webmaster, because he can keep all those threads together and make them all work out in the end. And that is not an easy job.
No, but thank goodness he can do it.
A lot of times you have readers to go through your book, because as a writer, there almost always is literally some plot point that you have forgotten to tie up.
Yeah.
And what's Keith doing in this novel?
He's tying knots.
He's tying up the plot points that the writers of the TV series has left open.
Absolutely. And it's fun.
Yeah.
So.
Because he doesn't spend too much time dealing with them.
Right.
Just enough.
And as you say here at the end of our notes, Keith never fails to deliver. And I'm not going to argue with that. There's nothing he's written that I have read that I have not really enjoyed. Wait a minute.
You didn't get that last email from him, did you? Oh, my God. The stuff he said in it. Oh, jeez.
Oh, jeez. All right. Well,
no, there's no email. Don't
panic.
Don't come down on me, Keith. Don't be listening.
So, with that in mind, we are going to get the opportunity one more time for Keith to deliver, because we are going to be reading A Time for War and A Time for Peace by Keith DeCandido.
Oh, my God. You just made the Descartes mistake again.
And, yeah.
Descartes did not say, "I think, therefore I am." Descartes said, "I think I am." The title for the next book is A Time for War, comma, A Time for Peace.
Mm-hmm.
There's no "and" in it.
Oh, imagine you picking up on that. My gosh.
Well, I'm editing the book. I'm writing as I go on, you know.
Yeah, there you go. All right, so...
People think I'm a grammar Nazi, but I'm a grammar Nazi because I got to be a grammar Nazi on my own work.
So, if you're listening to this, you know how to find us. Why don't you pass the word along to friends, enemies, neighbors,
friends, countrymen,
whoever. Call somebody somewhere else and tell them, hey, you need to listen to this podcast because it's just an outstanding podcast. And if you're so inclined, go on to Apple Podcasts and give us a review. If you feel we deserve 5 stars, well, we would really appreciate that. And for Bound by Honor, I am Judge M.
And I am Jorn.
Join us next time for the Klingon Book Review Podcast. Kapla! You have been listening to Bound by Honor, the Klingon Assault Group Book Review Podcast. Bound by Honor is brought to you by the Klingon Assault Group and is produced by Admiral Kirk Zantai Loon Keech. If you hear the call of the warrior, visit our homepage at www.kag.org to learn more about what it means to be Klingon. Perhaps you have what it takes to be one of us. Listener feedback is always welcome at podcast@kag.org. Kaplop!